Okay. Hashem Yazor. Your problem at the moment with me is that I bought a new sefer called Adarabe. I think I even wrote it in the email. And it is mind-blowing. It's all about Midas and people. And the way the book is written, and I wish you all have it and all start learning it, unfortunately, I think it's still only in Hebrew. It gives you ideas about the different topics that it's going to talk about. It explains it and discusses it, and then tells stories. So I'm going to try and do that for you. And I'm supposed to be typing them up at least and sending them with the email that I send, but it takes patience and time, and I don't have much of both. So I decided I'm going to start giving Shia a bit from this book and put it together, and you'll see how special it is, B'zirat Hashem. So the subject I'm talking about, he calls it giving in and the reward of giving in. Now, giving in means more to your midas than to anything else. And for example, there's a pasuk that says, "B'tach b'Hashem v'aseh tov." Have emunah, have bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then do good. And the question is, the Chofetz Chaim asks, what has bitachon got to do with doing good? There's a mitzvah to do good. You do good to people, you do to God. What does that have to do with bitachon? The Chofetz Chaim brings pshat as follows. Having bitachon means that everything in the world is guided and directed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to you, and obviously around the world, but now we're talking about you. And when things come your way, you must realize that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu involved and not people. So for example, the Chofetz Chaim says like this. If a person wants to, after davening in the morning, a man, before he goes to work, he wants to listen to a shiur, or he wants to learn for an hour or two and then go to work. So he wants to do aseh tov. He wants to do good. But then it can be gnawing at his conscience that he's not working enough. His competitors are working more than he is. And as a result, he will lose out in business. They'll have the edge. He won't make enough money. So in order to do that, in order to do the aseh tov, he has to first have betach b'Hashem. Everything is in the hands of Hashem. And if you're doing something right, then you're not losing. So if you have bitachon b'Hashem, betach b'Hashem, that farnosos from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu organizes things, he orchestrates things, so then you're able to do aseh tov. Giving tzedakah, for example, or doing ma'asim tovim, which also could be on the cherubim of your parnasa. You have the same dilemma. If I do this action, if I don't help this person, then I'll be working less and or dealing less with myself. And then how do I know I won't lose out? So the Chofetz Chaim says, "B'tach b'Hashem." If you have b'tachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you're able to do the good, because then you realize that it's not up to me, my parnoseh. I have to do parnoseh, but I don't have to go crazy. It's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu how much he decided he's going to give me. So if I'm still doing my shtadlis in a normal way, I'm not doing things that are weird, I'm not underworking, so then I cannot lose out by going to help someone. Of course, obviously within the realm of what we call being normal. Now let's take it to one step, I don't know, higher, but in another direction. It's incredibly important to remember with regards to Midas, and the Midas that we're actually referring to now at this point is when certain things you give into either to people so that people won't feel bad, or somebody says something you don't answer back, or something happens to you which seems to be not fair and you don't answer back and you don't retaliate and you keep it in. And you have betach b'Hashem, if you're able to realize that when people do things or circumstances happen, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is testing you to see whether you'll have emunah in him or whether you will answer back and have a nasty tongue. If you realize B'tach B'Hashem, I say to you, you'll get very good out of it. You'll be able to do good. So forget exactly Pshat and the Pasuk there, because that's what the Chacham is referring to. But it's definitely applied to this as well, as Seisha says. And we must always realize that when things are put in our way and we give in, we are doing such an incredible good deed to ourselves, something so special for ourselves, that we don't know a bracha is waiting just around the corner, just for us not to retaliate or to answer back or to harbor any evil thoughts at the person that did things to us. I'm going to tell you the stories now that are written in the book. And the underlying message that we have to remember for ourselves is that we're not in charge. So not in charge. Okay. So I'm going through all kinds of modern stories and older stories, and each one is wow. Okay. Rav Chaim Kreisert, I hope that some of you still know who that is. Rav Chaim Kreisert was nifter a few years ago. He was, for many years, the Rav of Belgium. He lived in Antwerp. He used to come to Eretz Yisrael many times. He was a Gaon that shines once in many, many years. And he was a young age. He was by the Chaim Moizel before the war, and Chaim Moizel was mechaved him. He was a Gaon Atzum. They said he didn't have to look into a sefer after a certain age. He knew it all of the heart. I saw him and heard him a few times. It was just, your jaw would drop, just this man's incredible goyness in Torah. In any case, his story that he tells is that when he was at a very young age, his parents sent him away from their home in Europe, I don't know where there was, to a yeshiva, which was very far away. And he was a young boy. Now, in many yeshivas in Europe then, as I'm sure you know, there were no dorms and no dining rooms. There was a shul, and you went in a shul. For dorms, you had to find somewhere to sleep. And for meals, you had to eat at balabatim that were prepared to host you. His balabat that he found, sometimes boys would go from one place to another. Every day they had a different place. They called it teg, days. Teg in Yiddish is a day. So they would eat days. Every day they would have a different host. So this Rav Chaim's host lives 4 kilometers, so about 2.5 miles away from the yeshiva. That's how he started out, Nebuch. A young kid having to walk 2.5 miles to his host. And where did he sleep? So there was a grocery store who was kind enough to allow him to put a mattress beneath the vegetable stand. So at night he would trudge to this vegetable store and he would sleep beneath the vegetables. Okay, that's how this little boy started his yeshiva life. As time went on, I think about a year and a half, he moved up in life, and he was allowed to put a mattress in the Ezra's Noshim of the shul. So he slept in the Ezra's Noshim of the shul that they learned, which was heaven. And he ate was a balabait who lived opposite the yeshiva. Okay? So he, Baruch Hashem, that's a total different ball game. The week, more or less, after he got these new accommodations, a new boy, young boy, came to yeshiva, saw that Rav Chaim was one of the older boys and knew the ropes, and asked Rav Chaim, where can he eat and where can he sleep? So Rav Chaim immediately took him without saying a word and said, here, the place opposite the yeshiva is vacant. You can eat there, and you can sleep on a mattress in the Ezra's Noshim. And Rav Chaim started off all over again from the beginning. Without saying that it was he, that he gave it to him, and it's something that he'd been cherishing for since day one. Pretty soon after that, the Nazis in Yimach Shemam took over the area and totally surrounded the yeshiva, got the list of all the bochim, and didn't allow any to escape. And one by one, they marched them up to the Ezra's Noshim, called out their name to make sure that they have the right boy in front of them, and then they opened the window of the Ezra's Noshim, made the boy stand in front of the window and shot him, and he would fall dead outside that window. So one by one, every single Shivi Bacher was called upstairs. Obviously, he wasn't in a nice way. Stayed in front of the window, was shot, and died out the window, fell out the window. When Nochaim's turn came, so he turned to Rebbe Shlomo and he said, Hashem Yisborach, with the chesed, b'shut the chesed, that I did in this Ezra's Noshim, please save my life. And it was his turn, and the guy that was standing there asked, Chaim, do you have parents? So he said, yeah. He said, well, so do I, and I'm sure they'd like to see me. And he said to the Chaim, I'm going to shoot in the air, because I have to sound that I've shot you. I'm going to shoot in the air, and you fall out the window amongst the dead bodies, and when everybody's gone, you run away. And that's what happened. And Reb Chaim says he was the only one that was saved amongst out of 300 Bachrim that were killed that day. And he cannot explain it other than the chesed that he did. So Reb Chaim says, you think, when I look back at that story, and you think that I did him a favor by giving him, by giving up my bed and giving up my place to eat. He did me a favor. He saved my life. So I don't have to give a nimshel to that story. Next one. The next story is something that only people that live in an apartment building can appreciate. Us in Eretz Yisrael, we don't always have the biggest deers. And Rabbi Zriel Oybach told me that one of the biggest things that are full in Beis Din, where neighbors fight, is when one neighbor wants to enlarge his apartment. And the law is that you have to get the permission of the majority, I think. Sometimes the entire building. But the majority of the building have to give you the consent that they allow you to build. Now, why do they need the consent? Because sometimes when you put out a new peset, when you add an extension to your dining room, you'll either be blocking the sunlight from another person's apartment, because now your extension blocks the sunlight, or you can see in, which before you couldn't see into his rooms, and now you can see into his rooms from your peset, that you, your porch that you just extended. So the law is you have to get their permission. Okay. Beis Din is full of that, because unfortunately, I don't want to talk bad, Chas v'Shalom, but many people, first of all, sometimes their time is correct. You really can disturb another neighbor by extending. But very often, it's not that. It's just that people have what's called tzarut ayin. They don't want you to. Why? Because they can't. And they can't afford it. And why should you have it better? And obviously they don't say it like that. But that's the underlying. It's kin. Unfortunately, there's a tremendous amount of kin in this. And Beis Din is crazy with so many cases of people blocking each other. In any case, this story is about a neighbor who lived on floor number 2 and a neighbor who lived on floor number 3. And they got married more or less at the same time. Both were similar people. Both had eventually the same, more or less the same amount of children, the same age. And the fact is that the neighbor on floor number 3 was marrying off his kids. And the neighbor number 2 wasn't marrying off his kids. But why? What happened? Because people would suggest, the shadchan would call and suggest to neighbor number 2, shidduchim. And then when the other side would hear, what's their name? And they would say the name. So they would say, well, him? Is that that person? They said, no. What happened was, there was a guy with the same name, his brother, the uncle of the kids, the father's brother, who did something very bad and had the same name, the same family name. So people would ask, is that him? They'd say, his brother. So no, we're not touching that kind of family. Why? Because the brother, the uncle, did something bad. So they had no shidduchim. So floor number 3 had his children, they got married, and floor number 2 was stuck. Eventually, floor number 3 came down to floor number 2 and said, listen, I need my married children are coming. I need to extend my apartment. Would you please sign it? You don't mind. So floor number 2 felt that 3 was very insensitive to his matzav of not having his kids married, and his floor number 3 was saying, you know, my married kids are coming, I don't have room for them, and we need to extend. Now, floor number 2 had a case. It would block his sunlight to some extent and so on. So he told floor number 3, I'll think about it. Top, Mr. Floor number 3 left, and floor number 2 told his wife, I don't feel like he's very insensitive. It wasn't nice the way he did it. So his wife looks at him and says, I think you're jealous. So, whoa, he doesn't think of it so straight in the face. And he said, well, you think I'm supposed to go upstairs and sign? Let him build? She said, yeah. So, a wife's a wife, and he went and knocked on the door, and he said, give me a piece of paper, I'll sign. The neighbor, without realizing what a conflict he had inside, he said, yeah, thank you. And the guy signed. The next morning, 7 a.m., 5 Arabs knock on the door. We need to extend the neighbor upstairs. And the only way to extend is to go through your apartment. I said, whoa. So not only was he allowing the other man to move, but his apartment became a thoroughfare to the extension. The dirt and the dust, because of the Arabs and carrying the building material and whatnot, through his apartment. So he was in for a real ride. And the whole time it was, his stomach was churning. It's not fair, it's not fair, what's going on, it's not fair. One day he's about to walk into his apartment, and the contents of a bucket of cement and whatever fell on top of him. And he was fuming. He ran inside and told his wife, that's it. He's going to court, he's stopping the building. His wife looks at him and says, I think you're jealous. The poor guy, whoa, he couldn't sleep that night. And Alfred fell on him, so he went upstairs and he knocked on the door. And they told the foreman, the kablan, that, you know, your guys missed my apartment. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know. And he came down and looked at it and he sent the workers to clean up. And then the kid said that whole night he couldn't sleep. He was tossing and turning, and all the Sifrei Musa were going through his mind. That he learned throughout his life how not to be jealous. And Tachlis at the end, he didn't do anything. And then after a few months, the construction was completed, and the neighbor number three made chanukah habayit, and number 2 went upstairs. Obviously, he was invited, and he was dancing with neighbor number 3. But his whole time, his stomach was upside down. A week later, he gets a phone call from a shadchan that there's a shidduch for his son. So he was used to the road already, and he said, okay, all very nice, it's a great book, great girl, my son's a great boy, but have they heard my name? I said, yeah. And you know that my brother did this and this? I said, yeah. And I said, nevertheless, I still want you. Why, what happened? Who was the girl? The girl was the daughter of the kaplan. The kaplan said that he's built so many homes, so many extensions, and he's never seen people with such incredible midas. They had out through their house. They didn't block them building. They didn't go to court to stop the construction. He said he wants his daughter to marry into such a family. The uncle did what he did. He said, that's the uncle. It's nothing to do with the kids. It's nothing to do with this family. This family is incredible. So again, it's the same thing. We think that we're giving in, and we're giving in. So the people in this book say that trapped behind such a thing is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu very often wants to give us a certain shefa. A certain broche. But sometimes we're not worthy of that broche because for whatever reason, and Hashem has to bring us to a higher level of dveikus, in like Hashem Yisboach, or of refinement of midas. And the key to that shefa will be how we deal with misyonis, how we deal with our own midas, how we deal with people. We don't see that at all. We don't recognize it as a key. The opening to an incredible shefa, but often it is from Shemayim like that. And if you would only pass the Nisayon in the best way possible, that is a dependent, direct ratio of how much you're going to get as a shefa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was a very, very big Gaon by the name of Yitzchok Yaakov Weiss. Yitzchok Weiss wrote Shuvah called Minchas Yitzchok. He was a Hungarian Rav. He was in England first, in Manchester, a Rav of a Shul. Eventually he was brought to the Eder Haredis in Yerushalayim, and he died in Yerushalayim. He was the head of the Eder Haredis, Dayan, the head Dayan, and a massive Talmud Chacham. I remember him, I saw him a few times, a massive Dayan. And the story was, he was suggested a Shidduch with a girl. And as a young man, and he was very famous, very big Talmud Chacham. And she suggested the shidduch for the girl. But nobody told him that she has terrible, terrible sores on her body, including her face. And he went on a date, and he saw what he saw. and he came back from the date. I don't know how many dates, but it was very short. And I think it was after 40 minutes, he announced to the shadchan, to his parents, you can make a lechaim. I want to marry this girl. And then, I think it was his mother or his parents, said to him, after they realized what happened, do you realize that she has these sores? He said, yeah, but I'm not doing it to Bas Yisrael. I'm not let him tell me, but I'm going to marry her. I'm not going to make her feel bad. She's a Bas Yisrael. And he married this woman, and he had a single child. I remember his child lives in Manchester, his son. The vice's son lives in Manchester. I was in his house. And soon after he had a child, I don't know how long after, this woman died. And then Ravais remarried. And Ravais, second wife, they didn't have children. And eventually they went to be tested. And the doctors told them that he could never ever have kids. He could never have children. So the person, I think he himself or the person telling the story, I don't know how this exactly came about, but the vice was never supposed to have children, according to his physical capabilities. But because if he wouldn't have married this first woman, then he might never have had any children. And this child has many offspring. So they are children to the vice, seemingly with our eyes, because he married a woman who had every right in the world not to marry her. But he was mevater. He was mevater on what a normal human being would normally be mevater. But here he wasn't. Now, not every story has beautiful endings. Don't get me wrong. You can say the same thing about Chazonish. The Chazonish dated a girl, and he married her. And after married, they didn't have children. And then some, I don't know when they found out, but they found out that she wasn't able to have children. And her family knew that before the marriage, but hid it from him. And so everybody, all that were close to the Chazonish, said, you can divorce her. They tricked you, and you won't have children. Chazonish said, she's a Bas Yisrael, I'm not going to divorce her, I'm not going to embarrass her. But the Chazonish never had children afterwards. So not all stories had a beautiful ending, but Chazonish became the Chazonish. Chazonish was God Lador. Now, that's not a halakha, okay? Let's not get it wrong. A person is allowed to divorce in such a situation. It could be that's what people are supposed to do. Here we're bringing examples of not necessarily things that we're supposed to do on that level, but we're supposed to at least realize that there's so much more to being mevatel. For example, if people push ahead of you in line, so nachon, you can gently tell them, maybe it wouldn't happen in America, I don't mean to be mighty loud in Israel, but you should gently tell them that there's a line and you go and they pushed in. But if it doesn't work, just keep your mouth shut. You did what you can do. The Rebbeinu Shlomo sent him to test you. If somebody cut you off and got to the light before you, etc. So nachon, you can come out of the knife, but I got the Baruch Hu sent him. There's a Rebbeinu Shlomo in the world. And you're getting angry, it's not going to help you. It won't help him, especially if somebody got a knife. And you can look at it and say, thank you, Rebbeinu Shlomo. I don't know what the message is, but I'm taking it nicely. And you don't know what bracha you can give to yourself. Another story was, a guy was living, I think, in Bnei Brak. And his neighbor knocked on his door and he said he's in terrible financial trouble. Does he mind signing as a guarantor for a loan that the neighbor has to take? So he realized, let's call our guy Reuven. Reuven knows that Shimon is in a dire strait, and he signed guarantor for Shimon. A lot of money. A few days later, Shimon disappeared with his entire family, and his apartment was laid bare, and Reuven realized that he was landed with a debt, a huge debt, and Shimon ran off to Chutz La'aretz, obviously in total debt, and escaped not to go to prison. But Reuven is now stuck with the loan, because he was the guarantor. And Taka, a month later, the people that lent the money knocked on his door. Since he signed, he has to pay. So Reuven told his wife, we now have a choiv that somebody left us. He wouldn't say who. And he took her with him to go to Gemachim to start borrowing money to pay off this choiv. At the same time, the neighbor had left. And Reuven never told his wife that it was a neighbor who gypped them, and they stuck that with the chayish because of the neighbor. And this went on for a long time. The wife would ask him, who was the one that did this to you? And he would tell his wife, it's Lashon Hara, you're not going to gain from knowing who, and I'm not telling you. So he was collecting money, trying to save as much as he can in order to pay back this huge chayiv. And a few months later, they get tickets from a cousin in America for a wedding, including tickets to come to this wedding, because they were close family. They decided that only she's going to go because he can't leave or whatever. So she got on the plane, went to the wedding, and as she was walking in the street somewhere, she bumped into her neighbor. And the woman saw the neighbor and was so nice to her. We're missing you. Why didn't you tell us that you're going? I hope everything is okay. You were such good neighbors. We hope you're coming back soon. And the woman, the neighbor, couldn't believe what was going on. What do you mean? She thought to herself, well, she doesn't know that I'm a ganef. She doesn't think that I'm a ganef. She's talking to me so nicely. Obviously, something's wrong. So now it didn't come to her, it didn't enter her mind that she doesn't know. But she must have thought that everybody was calling them a ganef. And that's not what happened. What happened was he fell into debt, but not because he stole anything. He just had bad mazel and he fell into debt. And here this neighbor was treating them so nicely, so the neighbor obviously must know that it was tremendous debt, but they don't blame him for being a ganef. So the woman that ran away went home, told her husband the whole story, and they came to that conclusion that these neighbors are incredible people for not believing that they're ganoving. And so he decided he's going to take loans in America as much as he can, and he took in loans, and he came back to Bnei Brak, and gave the guy all the money that he had paid up for the choiv, and he paid the people the choiv. All because he withheld his tongue from something which is so normal for people to tell, but he didn't tell it. Okay, there are more stories, and I do need to type them up, and I do need to tell you more. And maybe you've had enough of stories, because it's not a kindergarten, and I feel maybe this isn't the level of what you want to hear. So I'm going to stop it now, because I have to go to school.